thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
Are you ready for the fight? Illinois, are you ready for the fight?
It's official. J.B. Pritzker says he is running for a third term as Illinois governor.
We should be able to conduct oversight here.
Congress members react to being turned away from ICE facilities. And a new book shows what it's like working as a streetwise magazine vendor. And now to some of today's top stories. J.B. Pritzker makes it official. He is running for a third term as Illinois governor. Kicking off his campaign at the Grand Crossing Park Fieldhouse on the south side, Pritzker fiercely defended his record, depicting Illinois as a safe haven in a nation where freedoms are under assault.
When I was first elected, I told you that I was prepared to be a happy warrior on behalf of our state, even if it meant going it alone. I suited up to face the carnival barkers and the misery spelunkers and doom grifters. I handed out optimism like a shot of Malort, as a swift jolt to the heart. The workers of today and tomorrow choose Illinois because we built an iron wall around their freedoms. And because we told the fascist freak show fanatics to run their experiments on ending democracy somewhere else.
In response, Illinois House Minority Leader Tony McCombie said, quote, "The third term Pritzker slump won't be any better than seasons one and two. We know what to expect. Agency mismanagement, regressive taxation, and record spending." Chicago Public Schools' new interim CEO today laid out her vision for what the district's priorities should be. Speaking to the Chicago Board of Education for the first time since her elevation to lead the district, at least for now, Macklin King said she would center the interests of students.
Strong leadership begins with listening. I intend to meet with school communities, union partners, central office teams, and civic stakeholders to understand what's working and where we must do better. At the end of the day, every decision we make must center our young people.
Chicago's job market is growing strong. Chicago's metro area has seen 11 straight months of job growth and added more than 17,000 new jobs in May. That's according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Chicago's unemployment rate dropped 0.2% to 4.9%. Unemployment is down in all 12 metro areas in the state. And Chicago is aiming to be a horror destination, but in a good way. Universal Studios is developing a new immersive horror attraction across from the future home of Bally's Casino that it says will, quote, deliver fear all year. Located at 700 West Chicago Avenue, Universal Horror Unleashed will transform a currently vacant building into a house of horrors, along with food and beverage offerings and retail space, of course.
This venue will not only bring growth with new visitors to this community, but it will also create 400 permanent jobs for Chicagoans, which ultimately grows our local economy. I'm very excited about this announcement, and I have no doubt that fans of this genre will flock to our city for these memorable experiences.
Universal Horror Unleashed is expected to open in 2027. Coming up in the program, sellers of the magazine Streetwise share their stories in a new book. We hear from the local high school student who helped them put words to paper. But first, Chicago area members of Congress talk about their attempts to access ICE facilities. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Some members of Congress are saying they've been turned away from local ICE facilities as they seek transparency on the conditions detainees are experiencing. Federal law allows Congress members to perform oversight of these facilities unannounced. But the Trump administration says congressional visits have to be approved several days in advance by the Homeland Security Secretary. Joining us to discuss this issue are Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, a Democrat from the Northwest suburbs, Congresswoman Delia Ramirez, a Democrat from Chicago, and Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia, also a Democrat from Chicago. Thanks to the three of you for joining us. I know it's a busy time for you. Representatives Ramirez and Garcia, I want to start with you because you were both recently turned away from visiting an ICE facility in Broadview, suburban Broadview. Representative Ramirez, starting with you, please, what happened there?
We went to go do oversight with Congressman Davis and Jackson. We rang the doorbell and we waited for a long time to have to then head to the driveway where we saw some unmarked cars coming in and out. And Congressman Garcia identified us to someone through a hole of a fence because they wouldn't even have the audacity to come out and speak to us. And when we affirmed that we have the congressional authority to come and conduct oversight, someone who was unwilling to identify themselves just said to us, per guidance from his supervisors, that we should just send an email if we want to come. We were denied access to members of Congress that have full authority through Appropriations Act to conduct unannounced visits.
Representative Garcia, what was your reaction when all of this was happening that day?
I was very angry and disappointed, to say the least. Brought us to that Broadview facility is the fact that the Trump administration is targeting immigrants indiscriminately, including legal residents and U.S. citizens, and violating their rights and their due process. And we've seen ICE agents operating in secrecy, wearing masks, refuse to show warrants, and disappearing people without cause. That's not law enforcement, that's lawlessness. And we were also there to visit people that we believe are in detention at that facility, even though it's not supposed to be a detention center. But people got a chance to see how ICE is operating in this day and age. These are extreme actions of this administration, and they include kidnapping immigrants and sending them to prisons in El Salvador and Guantanamo Bay, in the South Sudan and Libya and other countries. Things are out of control, and they're going to get worse because in the big, ugly bill, as Democrats call it, there is unprecedented amount of funding, $80 billion that's come through the Judiciary Committee, where I am a member, for detention, to fund private detention centers. There's $14 billion for transportation and removal, and $67 billion for border enforcement and security, including building of the useless wall at the border.
Representative Krishnamoorthy, you and Congressman Jackson, you were also recently turned away from the South Loop ICE facility. What happened to you all there?
Your viewers may be familiar with this, but essentially ICE sent out hundreds, if not thousands, of text messages to residents of the Chicago area, summoning them to this ICE facility in the South Loop for quote-unquote check-in appointments. As they were pursuing their asylum cases or to build their status, people came downtown dutifully, including on Father's Day, and people got snatched, essentially, when they showed up by ICE from their families. Their families didn't know where they went or where they had been taken, I should say. And so Congressman Jackson and I showed up to the ICE facility to find out, and we were met with a masked agent who refused to identify himself, refused to even show his badge, refused to answer any questions, and then he promptly called the Chicago police to evict us as trespassers from this ICE facility. And that was absolutely unacceptable, and we have Since then, written to Kristi Noem, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, demanding inspection of those premises, and we're going to continue to follow up.
Okay, so here is a bit of what Congressman Jackson said at that South Loop facility after being turned away at the time.
People are going missing. This has been very disruptive and very chaotic. We don't know if there are substantiated, just ordinary missing persons reports that need to be filed, or if people's families have been abducted, or people being kidnapped. And we're just asking to clarify, to put an end to this chaos.
Representative Ramirez, another thing that seems to keep coming up is that the ICE agents that you all are being confronted with, or that some of the people who may be in the process of being deported are being confronted with, are not necessarily always identifying themselves, sometimes wearing masks to conceal their identity. What do you make of that?
I mean, they're not, it's not just concealing their identity through the mask, which we find to be completely unacceptable. No law enforcement, no one that's actually up to good things and following rules should be covering their face to start pulling and taking people. But they're also not providing us badge numbers. They're not providing us names. I serve in Homeland Security in the Oversight Accountability Investigation Subcommittee. And one of the questions that we brought is, who are these people that are masked? How do they get trained? Are they former correctional officers? Are they subcontractors? Did they put some flyer out there and just hired and recruited people? The idea that we don't know who these people are, and they're unwilling to identify themselves to members of Congress who have congressional authority to ask and enter these facilities, is not just unacceptable, it's unconstitutional. And these masked agents, if we want to call them, are violating the Constitution. It's why yesterday in committee, we have requested a subpoena to Secretary Noem to come and answer the questions about who they are and why they think it's okay to not allow us to come into the facilities.
And of course, Representative Krishnamoorthy, I know you all are referring to congressional oversight. Explain what that is and the duty and the authority of the Congress to conduct that oversight.
Well, remember, you know, Congress has the prerogative and the obligation to conduct oversight with regard to execution of the laws. In this case, it happens to be immigration laws or immigration enforcement. And not only that, but we fund immigration enforcement. And so as a consequence, we have the right to make sure that those funds are spent properly and that the enforcement is done within the law. The fact that they are not willing to answer these questions means that they believe that they are above the law, that they don't need to be held accountable for anything. And what we know from history is when people act with impunity the way that they are right now, bad things happen. That's why a four-year-old citizen child with cancer is deported from this country. That's why legal residents are being deported without due process of law. And so we know more bad things are going to happen, and so we have to prevent it by conducting this oversight.
And of course, you're referring to oversight beyond what we typically see coming from Congress members, which is an oversight hearing that might happen on the Oversight Committee.
That can also happen. Obviously, when Congresswoman Ramirez and Congressman Garcia and I and Mr. Jackson showed up, we were basically taking oversight to another level in the sense that, you know, when people don't respond to your texts and emails and phone calls the way that ICE doesn't, by the way, they've basically switched off their phones and they don't talk to our offices anymore. Well, we're just going to show up. We're just going to show up and do oversight in person. And so it's a little bit of extreme oversight, but that's what's necessary now.
So we did receive a statement just this afternoon from DHS Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin. It reads, quote, "As ICE law enforcement have seen a surge in assaults, disruptions, and obstructions to enforcement, including by politicians themselves, any requests to tour processing centers and field offices must be approved by the Secretary of Homeland Security. These requests must be part of legitimate congressional oversight activities." It goes on to say, "As for visits to detention facilities, requests should be made with sufficient time to prevent interference with the president's Article II authority to oversee executive department functions. A week is sufficient to ensure no intrusion on the president's constitutional authority." So a week is an increase beyond what we have previously heard from DHS and ICE requesting 72 hours notice. Representative Garcia, the very law that gives Congress members this oversight not also prevent DHS from implementing this requirement of notice?
That's correct. The law is very clear. Congress appropriates funds for the operation of federal facilities. These are federal facilities and federal employees, and we have the right to visit at any time, unannounced. What they are cooking up over the past week seem to be justifications for why they are refusing to let members of Congress do our job. Those are not requirements that had been in the law. They are not in the law. They're making it up in an effort to hide something. We want to shed light on what is going on. We want to see the conditions. We have constituents that we want to visit, and we have a right to know whether people have food, whether people are getting water, whether people are being able to take their medicines, whether they have beds to sleep in, because we have heard stories to the contrary. There's also an overabundance of people that are being detained in inadequate facilities. We simply want to verify and have the authority to do so under the laws of this country. With respect to the first point that that spokesperson for ICE made, protests and the intensification of the protests occurred after provocation by large numbers of federal agents that have been mobilized and assigned to monitor court rooms, to be at these report facilities. It's what triggered the situation in LA, the mass resistance to the arbitrary and profiling of people. That includes the detention of people for how they look, where they seek work, and of course for their detention and subsequent deportation, which now has expanded to include legal residents and U.S. citizens. The question is, who will be next if this continues?
Okay, we'll have to leave it there, and we look forward to hearing from you all as well as DHS in the future as this continues to play out. Our thanks to Representatives Delia Ramirez, Raja Krishnamoorthy, and Jesus Chuy Garcia. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Up next, vendors for the magazine Streetwise share their experiences in a new book. We hear from one of them right after this. Whether you find them on the street corners or outside the grocery store, Streetwise magazine has been a staple in many Chicago neighborhoods for decades. For the people who sell copies of the magazine, it's more than just a job. It's often their way out of poverty, homelessness, or other challenges. They're telling their own stories in a new book called Who We Are, Stories from the Chicago Streetwise Community. And joining us with more are A. Allen, a Streetwise vendor, and the book's author, Anthony Mateos, a student at Evanston Township High School, rising senior. Congrats to you. Thank you for both being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hey, Allen, let's start with you. You've been with Streetwise for 15 years. What was going on in your life when you found them?
Okay. When I found Streetwise, it was a way up and out of alcoholism and drug addiction. Okay. When I came to Streetwise, it was like the last house on the block. I was addicted to alcohol and drugs, and I finally got clean for a year, and I wanted to keep my sobriety. So when I came to Streetwise, it was a way up and out of drug addiction and alcoholism, okay? And the way I used Streetwise was every time I thought about alcohol or drugs, I would go out and sell my magazines. Okay, I would go out and sell the magazines, and that was a way of staying sober for me.
Okay, a way to redirect your attention and,
yes,
and behavior. I got it.
Yes.
Anthony, you had frequent encounters with Streetwise vendors when you were growing up. Tell us about that.
I grew up in Evanston. I still live there to this day. Growing up, I encountered a vendor in my neighborhood. His name is Alonzo. He still is a Streetwise vendor. And every time I encountered him, he had so much pride in selling the magazine. And it always stuck out with me. So when deciding what I wanted the main topic of this book to be, I kind of recalled to those memories growing up, and then that motivated me to choose Streetwise.
And to tell the stories,
exactly,
of the people who are selling Streetwise, including the man who's sitting right next to you. What does selling Streetwise mean to you? What is it? It's been 15 years. Obviously, it served its purpose in the beginning. What does it mean to you today?
It means the ability to to be an entrepreneur and to navigate my own life. By Streetwise offer a lot of opportunities to be your own boss, or to be self-employed, or to be an entrepreneur, which means I get to choose where I want to sell, what times I want to sell, and how long I want to stay out to sell the papers. You know, that's very important to me. You know, to be able to
sort of steer your own course, right?
Yes.
Plot your own course and make choices for yourself and earn income.
Yes, that's very important to me.
Anthony, what are some common misconceptions that people have about Streetwise and its vendors?
A lot of people believe that Streetwise is a homelessness newspaper, when in reality it simply isn't. Rather, Streetwise is a model of self-entrepreneurship and has doors open to anyone. Streetwise operates under a model where vendors could buy the magazine at the price of $1.15, and then they could resell the magazine at $3, so they could gain a profit. This makes it so that they are their own boss. Like A. Allen, for example, he gets to choose his own hours, he gets to choose where he works, and it's just such a great experience.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, Streetwise motto is a hand up and not a hand out, you know, and that's very important, you know, because Streetwise vendors are not out bigging. We out as entrepreneurs. We're giving you something in exchange for your money. And not only for your money are you helping the individual, but you're helping the organization as a whole. And the organization is a organization that reaches out to the homeless or whatever situation or whatever crisis you may be going through. Like, for instance, mine was a drug addiction, but I was homeless for 3 years, and still people come through the doors that are homeless and looking for a way up and out of homelessness. Or whatever your situation may be, or whatever your crisis may be, Streetwise can offer you some help.
What does it mean for you to have someone else interested in telling your stories, right, oral histories, in a book?
That's very important, and I want to thank Anthony right here, right now, for doing the book, because all the proceeds go towards Streetwise, and I recommend that everyone read the book, because Streetwise is a lot of the employees or the vendors are marginalized, whereas a lot of people don't know their stories, but Anthony have a way of explaining it, and I think you did a good job. You work very close with Streetwise, and I really appreciate you for doing it.
Anthony, aside from the business model, which is obviously unique or it's different, what makes Streetwise different from other magazines or publications? For folks who maybe have not had the chance to pick one up yet, what do you want to tell them about what's inside?
In order to read Streetwise, you have to interact with a vendor. Streetwise isn't an online publication. There's no way to read Streetwise through a website or through a paywall, like a lot of other newspapers and magazines. In order to read Streetwise, you have to interact with your local vendor. And it really makes this beautiful connection between you and another core member of your community. And all the vendors, they make up Chicago. They are a crucial pillar of the Chicago community, and that's truly something special.
A, what do you want folks to know about what's inside Streetwise and why they should pick one up?
And I appreciate that you're breaking it down very well, Anthony, because it is like a personal relationship between the customer and the vendor. You know, a lot of people buy the paper, you know, not just for the content of the paper, but the content is good. But a lot of people want to just develop a relationship with the vendor, because I look at it as being like you have a lot of people that consider themselves high and mighty, and then you have the lower class, whereas, you know, they're barely making a living, but there's a lot to be discussed among them, okay? And this is the magazine is the intercessor between, you know, what people you normally wouldn't meet, just like I normally wouldn't have met you, but I'm here today because of Streetwise, and the same way it is out there when we're selling the papers, people that you normally wouldn't meet, you know, because I get a chance to meet lawyers, doctors, architects.
Yes, and today I get to meet the two of you, so thank you both for joining us, because I know you've got two copies with you, one that celebrates Juneteenth, another with Pope Leo, celebrating his Chicago roots on the front. And I also noticed there's a Venmo QR code.
Yes, it is.
So if you don't have cash, people, you can still purchase a Streetwise.
Okay, and now today, as of today, we're using PayPal, too.
PayPal as well, so no excuses. We have to leave it there. My thanks to A. Allen and Anthony Mateos for coming in. Congrats to you both on the book and its success. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And we're back right after this. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.